This is KUNC's Colorado Edition. I'm Carly Huckles.
And I'm Erin O'Toole. It's the last episode of the year. Can you believe it?
I cannot believe it.
Time flies. Coloradans living on the Western Slope are paying more for their health insurance than those on the Front Range. One state lawmaker thinks he can fix the problem. We'll hear more about what that might look like. Plus,
snow equals money, and more of it is more money, and less of it is less money.
Climate change is creating a trend towards shorter winters, and that could take a toll on the ski industry. We'll hear how resorts are finding ways to adapt. Then, after receiving a death threat, a Colorado doctor wondered if he would be safer carrying a gun. So he weighed the risks and benefits.
As an internist by training, we're very analytical and detail-oriented, and so...
And you're smiling as you say that.
And it's true, and I fully admit it.
We hear that story.
And later, we'll hear a review of the film Vice. But first, it's another profitable year for U.S. Christmas tree farmers. Strong sales were due in part to a new generation of clientele.
Let me guess, is it millennials?
You guessed it. That's exactly what KUNC and Harvest Public Media's Esther Honig found.
Whereas baby boomers were sold on the convenience of a fake tree, millennials are drawn to a more natural, local product that offers an experience. At least that's what the National Christmas Tree Association says. Derek Mullen of Everett Farms in Colorado agrees. He's seen a large share of his sales driven by social media as young people post holiday photos with their new tree.
Yeah, we see a lot of selfies and a lot of people who are really just, they want to be part of the tree buying experience, I guess, and they want to really understand where the trees come from.
After several years of falling prices, real Christmas trees are 17% more expensive now than in 2015. Esther Honig, Harvest Public Media.
This is actually a really refreshing thing to hear. Most stories you read these days, millennials are destroying something, like cable or the napkin industry.
I know, American cheese. I guess we need to stop painting generations with a broad brush.
That'd probably be a good idea. There are only five Colorado lawmakers with leadership titles who live on the Western Slope. Representative Dylan Roberts is one of them. The Democrat from Avon will soon lead the state's new Rural Affairs Committee. And he says the rising cost of health insurance will be at the top of his agenda when the session starts January 4th. KUNC's Scott Franz has more.
Dylan Roberts represents two counties that have a lot to brag about. Rout County is home to Howelson Hill, the oldest ski area in America. And a recent study by the American Medical Association found Eagle County residents have the third highest life expectancy in the nation. But his district also holds an unflattering distinction. It's home to some of the highest health insurance costs in the state.
Insurance companies keep raising their premiums every single year, sometimes by 30 to 40% a year, meaning that people, families, are having to decide between paying for their mortgage or paying for childcare and insurance.
For example, where Roberts lives in Eagle County, a family of five has just two health plans to choose from on the state's insurance marketplace, Kaiser and Anthem. It's even less in other areas. Here's what interim Colorado Insurance Commissioner Michael Conway told us in November.
There are 14 counties on the Western Slope that only have one insurer, Anthem. Going into next year, there will still be in those 14 counties, we're only going to have Anthem.
And residents in rural and mountain locations like Paul Gerhart typically pay about $500 more each month than similar plans offered along the Front Range. Gerhart and his wife retired in the town of Edwards. They used to pay less than $500 a month for insurance 8 years ago. Today, it's more than $1,900.
It's certainly unpleasant to us to pay that amount of money every month for health care, but we are fortunate enough that, you know, it hasn't drastically impacted us the way this issue has for some people.
The Gerharts even thought about moving to Las Vegas to save an estimated $10,000 a year on costs, but they're staying put. Dylan Roberts says other families in his district aren't as fortunate.
Now that the individual mandate is gone, we're seeing hundreds, if not thousands, of individuals and families decide to go without health insurance coverage because of those costs.
So why do residents in some of the healthiest counties in America also pay some of the highest health insurance costs in the country? Steve Erkenbrock is CEO of Rocky Mountain Health Plans, one of the insurance companies serving Western Colorado.
You have many, many, many communities with only one hospital or one specialist. And as everyone knows, and now from Economics 101, that erodes the concept of competition if you only have one person that is out there.
And Erkenbrock says it's a problem that only state lawmakers can fix.
If there were an easy answer, we all would have implemented it a long time ago.
Which brings us back to Representative Dylan Roberts and his role as chair of the Rural Affairs Committee. He says the combination of a democratically controlled House and Senate, along with a Democrat as governor, will clear the way for a fix during the 2019 session.
My first bill that I'm going to introduce when the session convenes in January is going to be a bill that will bring competition into the insurance market by creating a state-backed insurance option.
And what exactly does that mean for an individual or family looking for insurance?
So a state-backed option will give people the ability to purchase their insurance through the state rather than a private insurance company, and it will bring competition to the market, it will be cheaper, and hopefully create a competitive scenario where prices start to stop increasing or even go down.
But Roberts isn't the first lawmaker to try and fix this problem. His predecessor in the House, Diane Mitchbush, asked the state to end the system that allows insurance companies to set different premium rates for different regions of the state. The state didn't back the idea over fears such a move could lead to higher costs for Front Range residents.
It's going to take a lot of late nights here at the Capitol, but that's something that I'm looking forward to getting done.
The high cost of health insurance isn't the only issue Roberts and the Rural Affairs Committee plan to address. He says the group will also focus on expanding high-speed internet to more rural areas and try to find ways to fund the Colorado Water Plan. I'm Scott Franz at the State Capitol.
People, guns are an incredibly polarizing subject. To better understand why that is, we ask the question, when you look at a gun, what do you see? We've heard from a rancher who uses guns to protect his livestock and a teenager who sees them as a symbol of the trouble in his neighborhood. You can find those on our website, KUNC.org. And now for another perspective, KUNC's Lee Patterson visited a community health center in Colorado Springs to hear what they thought.
So I have a few slides to go over just so that we kind of
one of the first slides shows the words, "I'm going to kill Dr. Wallace." Then Dr. Eric Wallace tells his story.
This was now 6 to 7 years ago when I saw a patient in Tulsa, Oklahoma in my practice. And
he had refused to prescribe this patient more opioids. The patient had gotten really upset. The next day, he was informed of
a person who called into clinic saying, "I'm going to come up there and kill Dr. Wallace." And so I had to seriously think about, do I need a firearm for protection?
Wallace is now an associate professor of medicine at the University of Colorado School of Medicine.
When you look at a gun, what do you see?
I see fear.
Fear that guns can kill.
Fear around if that firearm is not handled appropriately, the consequences that could happen.
After the meeting, Wallace and I talked in his office about that death threat. Now, some people might decide whether or not to buy a gun impulsively. Not him.
As an internist by training, we're very analytical and detail-oriented. And so
you're smiling as you say that.
And it's true, and I fully admit it. So
he set out to answer the question, would he and his family be safer with a gun in the home, with two pieces of data? The first,
the greatest risk of injury or death for someone who owns a firearm, that greatest risk is to the firearm owner.
He's talking here about suicide. Nearly 24,000 people died by firearm suicide in the U.S. last year. The second data point,
the thought that one mistake one time could lead to the death of one of my children.
According to a new study from the University of Michigan, in 2016, more than 3,140 kids died from gunshot wounds. The majority of these deaths were homicides and suicides. Accidents are more rare.
I can't handle that. That's not a risk I wanted to take.
Given all of this, Wallace decided not to buy a gun for protection. But many, many others make a different calculation. Polls show that a majority of people own guns for protection. But a Harvard study from 2015 found that victims used a gun for self-defense in just under 1% of crimes, like robbery or assault. Wallace is on an ongoing fact-finding mission on guns. He's gone out shooting a few times, and he's part of a group called the Colorado Firearm Safety Coalition. So we take a trip to Bristlecone, a gun shop and range near Denver, for a different take on fear and firearms.
How often would you say people come in here wanting to purchase a firearm for protection?
More often than the recreational side.
Jacqueline Clark owns Bristlecone, and she's also a member of the Colorado Firearm Safety Coalition. She got into shooting after a home invasion scare.
So in self-defense, why would I need a larger caliber weapon? Versus...
Wallace is full of questions for Clark.
Would you agree with the statement that the person at greatest risk of injury and death is the firearm owner themselves?
In what context of suicide?
In context of suicide. So things can change in life. You can become depressed, you can become demented. If you then have access to that loaded firearm, there's a higher probability that you're going to use that to complete suicide.
Clark is nodding yes, but she does believe you're safer with a gun in the home, with proper storage and training.
In my opinion, then you're a little bit more in control of your safety than without one.
When Dr. Wallace looks at a gun, he still sees fear, especially related to teens. They're impulsive, he says. Maybe they've had a really bad day. Maybe they know their parent keeps a gun in the house.
That's a pretty horrible consequence. And those are some of the things that scare me, because I'm a father of a teenager now who's been struggling. There's no way I would have firearms in my home.
From fear to power to practicality, when you look at a gun, there are many, many different things to see. It's all about perspective. For Guns in America, I'm Lee Patterson.
Guns in America is a new public media reporting project on the role of guns in American life. And again, you can find all three of these stories in our series at KUNC.org.
All right, Erin, New Year's Eve is coming up fast.
It's almost here.
What are your plans?
Well, I'm hoping to go out and hear some music. If that doesn't pan out, I'm probably just going to make a playlist of my favorite music and dance right in my living room.
There you go.
I think music's really important to starting the new year off right in the right frame of mind. As for resolutions, I do love making those lofty promises to myself. I'm going to eat only healthy food. And then when I break my resolutions, I feel like a normal person.
There you go.
What about you? What are your plans?
Well, I gave up on the whole partying and drinking thing a while ago because waking up hungover in a new year just is not the way that I like starting out.
I've heard.
So I clean my house and then I go to bed early and I wake up refreshed and ready to take on the new year.
That doesn't sound like a bad idea. Do you want to come up and clean my house for
Not this year.
Okay. I had to ask.
I also wanted to look at what people around the office were doing for their New Year's plans.
Yeah.
Let's hear some of them.
Hi, I'm Stephanie Daniel, a reporter with KUNC. This New Year's, I'm excited to hang out with friends, play a lot of board games, and drink lots of champagne. Have a very happy holiday and a happy New Year's.
Hi, I'm Matt Bloom. I'm a reporter with KUNC. The great thing about New Year's for me is that I always set a really achievable New Year's resolution. It's not something like be more open-minded. It's very specific. Like I'll say buy 3 pairs of socks and I'll go buy those 3 pairs of socks. It'll be very achievable resolution. And I think more people should do that because it feels good to achieve something right off the bat at the beginning of the new year. So To all the people out there trying to do some grand New Year's resolution, pick something achievable that you're actually going to do, and you'll start 2019 off a great way.
So I started playing the Highland bagpipe when I was about 11 years old. And after about a year or two, so I was about 12-ish, I learned the traditional New Year's song, Auld Lang Syne. For those of you who don't know, it was written by Robert Burns, Scotland's most famous poet. It goes something like this. Should old acquaintance be forgot and never brought to mind? Should old acquaintance be forgot and auld lang syne? Well, for every year, for as long as I can remember, I play Auld Lang Syne right at midnight. I've played it at house parties, I've played it when I've been cooking in restaurants, in my apartment complex, I've played Auld Lang Syne for family and friends, and everyone who's around listening. So, when the clock strikes midnight on December 31st and you hear bagpipes nearby, it might be me. I'm Desmond O'Boyle. Happy New Year.
I've had so much fun asking the staff what their traditions and plans are this holiday season, but right now I want to hear from you, our Colorado Edition listeners. Right now I'm asking a question on Twitter that'll help us move into some new episodes of Colorado Edition in this next year. What is the first thing that comes to mind when you think Colorado?
Mm-hmm.
What about you, Erin?
I can't help but think of the mountains.
Yeah. I think 14ers.
Yeah.
Hiking.
I think like skiing, mm-hmm. snowboarding. So.
Well, you can let me know what your answer is on Twitter at KHUCKELS. And if you don't have a Twitter, feel free to shoot me an email, carly.huckles@kunc.org.
You know, last year I actually made a resolution to go skiing more.
How did that work out? Well, you just said you don't follow through with your resolutions.
I know, and it didn't happen once, so I'm consistent. Minus my contributions, one of the most important contributors to our region's economy is the ski industry. And right now, it's dealing with some pretty big changes. Probably the biggest one is climate change. For KUNC, Ali Budner has more on how resorts in Colorado and across the West are having to adapt.
On a hot day back in September, I visited Arapahoe Basin Ski Area.
Got Dad and kiddo over here playing Frisbee.
The resort's Mike Nathan is giving me a tour. As we walk, Nathan points to a couple of kids running through a sprinkler.
I guarantee you that's a first for A-Basin. Kids shirtless playing in water in September at almost 11,000 feet.
Oh, and that German music in the background?
Today's our first ever Oktoberfest here at A-Basin.
Nathan says it's been a summer of firsts for this small ski area.
It's the first summer that we've had true, like, events every weekend.
He says they've drawn more people up this summer for hiking, mountain biking, and wildlife viewing. On the day I visited, the gold-leafed aspens were an attraction, in addition to the Biersteins and Strudel, of course. Nathan says this summer expansion was a natural way of growing their business and bolstering their annual income, using infrastructure they already had.
We think we've got such a cool place here that we really want to try to encourage people to use it all year round.
But the move is also related to shrinking winters. A recent report funded by the Environmental Protection Agency said if our current warming trend stays on course, nearly all ski areas in the country will see their winter recreation season shorten by a lot, 50% by 2050 and a whopping 80% by 2090. That's a problem for the ski industry. Tori Udall is with the Boulder-based nonprofit advocacy group Protect Our Winters.
Really, snow equals money, and more of it is more money, and less of it is less money.
According to the Outdoor Industry Association, snow sports contribute over $17 billion and more than 170,000 jobs to the economy, and that's in our region alone. Earlier this year, Udall's group published its own economic report.
During low snowfall years, the average number of jobs lost across the country is over 17,000, and the average revenue loss is just over $1 billion.
Of course, weather and snow seasons can vary quite a bit. In response to a question on preparing for climate change, a representative from Vail Resorts said they're not too worried. They're having a really good snow year. And that's true. Chris Linsmeyer is with Colorado Ski Country USA, an industry group that represents 23 ski areas in Colorado.
This year, we've had plentiful early season snowfall.
But, he says, it's important to note that over the long term, the mountains have been seeing more frost-free days.
Which has a huge impact on our industry, especially in the early season as resorts are utilizing man-made snow and working to get the resorts open.
And it's a trend the ski industry can't ignore.
Climate change is certainly something that our resorts are seeing affecting their business and are taking seriously and trying to come up with solutions to it.
Small resorts like Arapahoe Basin and big ones like Aspen.
We actually debuted our newest summer activity center up on Snowmass this summer. It's called Lost Forest.
That's Christian Knapp with the Aspen Skiing Company.
And we've got several cool activities built into the forest up there for families to enjoy. There's an alpine coaster up there. We've got a giant rock climbing wall. And we've really continued to build out our mountain bike downhill program as well.
But he says Aspen is also focusing on how to make and keep more snow on their slopes for the fall, winter, and spring.
We are investing in more snowmaking, coverage pipelines, holding ponds, more brushing on the mountains so you can open with less snow, all those things. We want to be prepared going forward.
Back at Arapahoe Basin, Mike Nathan says they're preparing that way too. And he says while summer offerings aren't a silver bullet, it will definitely help their bottom line.
We've been very pleasantly surprised with the numbers we're getting, but to compare them to our winter visitation is apples and oranges, totally.
Their bread and butter, you could say, is still in the powder. For the Mountain West News Bureau, I'm Allie Budner.
The new movie Vice may be about crime or not. Its director, Adam McKay, mostly does comedy. For KUNC film critic Howie Mofshevitz, who teaches film and television at CU Denver, Vice may be a comedy or not.
Adam McKay, the writer and director of Vice, has collaborated with Will Ferrell on Anchorman, Talladega Nights, and The Other Guys. So you figure that he's got a fair amount of funny cynicism in him. But maybe not so much cynicism as McKay shows in Vice, a story about the former vice president to George W. Bush, Dick Cheney. McKay also has a goodly amount of contempt in him, for a man he clearly finds quite contemptible, with one very deeply felt exception. Vice opens on Cheney, Christian Bale, as a young man drinking and carousing his way to an early exit from Yale. He's a slob and a wastrel and a cruel young man, until his wife Lynn, Amy Adams, lays into her hungover husband one morning and tells him bluntly that she is not about to become a mom with 10 kids living in a trailer with a no-account husband. And from there, Dick Cheney begins his rise to power in America. He starts with no apparent political ideas or ideology, but because he likes Donald Rumsfeld's callous scorn, he decides to become a Republican, which leads to Congress and his tenure as Secretary of Defense, and then to the office of the Vice President. The movie uses Cheney's recurring heart troubles and his heart transplant to underline its picture of a heartless man. Adam McKay's made a sarcastic movie with plenty of nerve, and he doesn't alert you to his departures from literal actuality. A bedroom conversation between the Cheneys sounds out of whack until you realize that they've imperceptibly eased into a scene from Macbeth about how to grab power. The Cheneys are just as nasty as the Macbeths, but Dick Cheney gave up early on the idea of becoming king or president of the United States. Instead, he went for power less noticed. Cheney likes to fly fish. The Secret Service code name for him was Angler, and Adam McKay expands the meaning of Angler from someone fishing to someone always angling for something. George W. Bush, Sam Rockwell, wants to talk to Cheney about becoming his running mate, but Cheney plays cagey and elusive. As they talk, Cheney the fisherman skips a fly across the water. He's leading Bush along. The fly looks enticing. It floats. Cheney evades. Bush takes the bait. He grants Cheney power over international affairs and more, and Bush leans over the table, a fly hooked to his mouth. This George Bush is a buffoon, and Cheney just leads him on while Bush never figures it out. As the tricky narrator of Vice says, when 9/11 came, others saw it as a tragedy, but Cheney saw opportunity. The result for America is a war in Iraq, the horrific torture program, and a giant step towards Cheney's goal of a unitary presidency, meaning unbridled presidential power. The Bush-Cheney duet comes off with two terrific performances from Christian Bale and Sam Rockwell. The two simply absorb themselves into their parts, Bush as an exuberant idiot and Cheney as an ultimate manipulator, observant and quiet until he sees his moment to strike. It's funny in its way, and also a devastating portrait of malevolence. But there is that spark of remarkable love and decency. Cheney's daughter Mary's gay and married to a woman. Cheney supports her, and he has never spoken against gay marriage, even though it's a major Republican issue. When the other daughter, Liz, rejects Mary and attacks gay marriage to win an election, the hurt in this devoted father's eyes is profound. But Vice does not go soft on Dick Cheney. It's a full-out attack on the man, his character, and his politics. I've watched the movie twice this week. The second time through, it seemed less raucous, less like it was having a good time with all this malice. The film seemed more consistently serious and angry, and the overall tone less lighthearted. Not glum, but not so joyfully disparaging. For KUNC, I'm Howie Mofshevitz.
So before we close out the last episode of Colorado Audition for the year, let's take a look back at a few things that made the news in 2018. Colorado continues to have one of the fastest growing populations in the country, according to U.S. Census Bureau data. The state's population increased by nearly 80,000 people between July 2017 and July 2018, for a total of now around 5.5 million people.
Wow. I mean, anytime you get on I-25, you can see them.
Yes, you can.
Even with all of those people, the wait times to get through security lines at Denver International Airport could soon be a lot shorter as the airport tests out new, more advanced security equipment. If the test is successful, all screening lanes could have the new system by 2021.
Now that's something that's exciting.
Yes, indeed.
We also learned Colorado is out as a potential host for the 2030 Winter Olympics, and hemp is in, newly legalized in the Farm Bill.
Plus, we learned that Denver Mayor Michael Hancock and Boulder County's district attorney will work to vacate thousands of marijuana convictions that happened before the drug was legalized in Colorado.
And more recently, Broncos fans were able to experience the height of boozy technology when the Bud Light Bot was introduced. It has a mechanical arm that fills plastic cups from the bottom up using a special cut and magnets. It still needs two people to push the button at the same time to start the pour, but we are well on our way into the future with that one.
I, for one, welcome our beer-pouring robot overlords.
And speaking of brews, here is something to look forward to January 1st. There are more than 50 Colorado craft breweries in line to get on shelves when grocery stores in the state will be allowed to sell full-strength beer.
Finally.
King Soopers and Safeway will be taking a regional approach to stocking the shelves with more localized breweries. But we will be able to see names like Odell, Left Hand, Upslope, and Elevation Beer Company in most grocery stores across Colorado. And if that's not exciting, I don't know what is.
Beer is something to celebrate. This has been the last episode of Colorado Edition for 2018, and it's only made possible with support from our KUNC members. Thank you for listening, and thank you for being a part of this journey with us.
We hope you have the most happy New Year's Eve and day.
Our show this week was produced by me, Erin O'Toole.
And me, Carly Huckles. News director Catherine Welch contributed to our show, along with editors Brian Larson and Ashley Jeffcoat, who manages digital.
Our intro music is Remember Me by Colorado musician Kalatana. We also heard Robbie Reverb with Bling Bong and Auld Lang Syne performed by the United States Marine Corps Band, and this version performed by Dexter Britton. Other music in this episode was provided by Blue Dot Sessions.
If you like what you're hearing, make sure you never miss an episode. Subscribe to Colorado Edition at KUNC.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, why not make it a New Year's resolution to subscribe? Just don't be like me. Stick to your resolution.
And join us next Sunday evening at 9 on KUNC. Thanks for listening, and have a happy and safe New Year.